I like the songs about heaven. I thought that Randy would lead even more of those as he began this morning. Soldiers who are in a war on foreign soil have to focus pretty intensely on what they're doing. And I'll bet there's hardly a day go by that they aren't wishing that they were back home. And I think about how many days maybe I don't even think about heaven. I think, boy, you know, if we're fighting on foreign soil, we need to be thinking about going home. And if we are not, we may love this world far too much. You know, we need to think about heaven, need to sing about heaven, need to read about heaven. And if we're not, we need to wonder why we're not. What's wrong? The elders and I talked a while back, even last year, about the possibility of having sort of a short class just prior to the evening worship service on Sunday for the little kids. Kids small as Abby or Wyatt, little ones, and then as old as they would like to be involved. Just a little class that would be just maybe 15 minutes, maybe quarter till 5, where we could sing a couple of little songs, let the little boys practice song leading, maybe ask them some Bible questions and have them memorize a scripture or something. So we thought that might be a something to pursue, and we want to try to implement that. So we're going to do that beginning tonight. So if you can come just a few minutes before services begin, bring your kids. We'll come down front, just spend a few minutes together. And we'd love to invite all of you, especially those who have little children, to bring them. And any are welcome, as old as that they would like to be, to come up front. Not just the 2-year-olds or 3-year-olds, but 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds and older if you'd like to. So we want to invite you to do that. To try that, see how that goes, see how we get some good response. We'd like to keep doing that. So we want to invite you to be a part of that. Okay. No. Is there an? Am I not getting any sound back there? Fuzz. Okay. Fuzz. We're working on getting some taping done. We're wondering if there's a battery issue here.
Green light. Green light.
No lights.
No lights. Maybe there should be a light.
All right. So, all right, well, if it's fuzz, then we'll probably have to work on correcting that later. They're AA batteries, so I don't have a... I don't know. Anyway, we'll just go ahead. Yeah. Don't worry about it this time.
I can get you some, but...
All right. Yeah. Our theme this year is defending the faith. Part of our study on faith is defending the faith. And I think we need to consider various aspects of our faith. And perhaps the most fundamental to that is our belief in God Himself. Psalm 19, I always like to read, because it claims that God has declared Himself to mankind in two ways. One, by His Word, and secondly, by His world. And we're going to look at both of those this year to strengthen our faith. Today, I want us to focus on His world for a few moments. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies proclaim the work of His hands. And the first thing I want you to notice is just a principle that everything that exists in this world is the effect of something that caused it to exist. Anything in here is an effect. Something caused these things to exist. The question is, what is that something that caused all these things to exist? And the answer is that just any explanation will not do. That it must be a reasonable explanation, a logical explanation, the most reasonable explanation possible. For example, consider these effects. What caused them? Did they suddenly appear out of thin air? Was there an enormous explosion of glass or wood or metal that caused these things to exist? Maybe a really smart monkey came to produce these things? Did they gradually evolve from metal ore or pine cones or hot silicone? Do they show evidence of high intelligence? Do they show complexity in their design? Do they require efficient engineering or technical skills? Do they require an intelligent, skilled engineer or a workman? What caused these? Is there order when you look at these devices? Is there design? Is there workmanship? Is there engineering involved? Is there efficient, precise engineering? Is there intelligent? Or was it an accident? Was there lack of intelligent direction that resulted in these things? I would venture to say that if I took a vote, took a poll, that we probably unanimously would all agree on the what caused, or that on the effects of these, that they were caused by something that was intelligent and that they were designed. Well, the world is like that as well. What you see is the effect. But something caused these things. What was it? Well, scientists tell us that they happen by chance, that they're random. And they insist, as Harvard biologist Richard Lewontin said, we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. That is an unacceptable alternative or possibility. The Bible, on the other hand, persists and says, for every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. You have to make a choice of what is most reasonable in terms of its explanation. When I talk about the existence of God, I do a lesson like that. I like to do it in a simple way, because that way the majority of people can get the point. And today, I would like to do it with a little friend of mine, the woodpecker. He is a very interesting character. We have one of these guys outside of our house that we see every so often, and we like to get the binoculars out and watch him. And so all of you little guys, I like to choose simple illustrations because there are a lot of little people here that would like to think about this in a way that they can comprehend it. Everybody who's older and really, you guys will get it anyway. I expect you to know it. We watch him every so often outside our house, and I've learned he's a pretty fascinating fellow. You know, you look at this guy and you hear him out there pecking away, and so you go look him up on the internet, try to learn a little bit about him. And he has all kinds of interesting little features, so I'm just going to share a few of those with you. And the first I want to talk about is his beak. It's a really interesting little design. It's kind of like a jackhammer, if you would. You ever seen a jackhammer bust up concrete? Well, you might think that with a beak pounding on a tree all the time, it would either wear down to where it was nothing but a nub, or it would just shatter it. But this beak is shaped in just such a way, like a chisel, that so it won't shatter. And secondly, it is a part of him that always is growing. It always replaces itself. And so it has an industrial strength to it that really no other birds have. Now I'm kind of working from the least fascinating to the most fascinating parts of this bird. But the beak is an interesting little device he has. The second one is he has some specialized feet. Now, most birds have three toes out front and one in the back. But this bird has two toes out front and two toes in the back so that he can grip the tree in really in a vice-like manner to pinch and grasp the bark. That gives him the ability to either stand upright, vertical, or turn upside down, or go around the tree sideways in any direction. And it's kind of neat because they work very much in conjunction with another part of his body called the tail, the tail feathers. Now, he is different than all other birds in the kind of tail that he has. He has a more resilient tail that's spongy. It has a tough, spiny-like ends to it. They're sharp. and they kind of dig into the tree. So it acts almost like a kickstand on a bicycle. You know how a kickstand keeps the bike stabilized and upright? Well, this thing braces the bird. So, and it's almost like a tripod. If you have his feet out front like this, grasping the tree, and you have the tail that fans out in the back, it kind of acts as a way to stabilize him when he's doing his work of excavating his site. It's neat how these things just kind of work together. Now, the most sophisticated part of this bird is his head. Really fascinating. And Philip May, he is a scientist at UCLA, did a lot of study on these birds, and he calculated that a crow size, a woodpecker that's about the size of a crow, is capable of hammering its beak into a tree trunk at a rate of up to 20 times per second. 20 times. Now, he doesn't do that all the time. You can remember listening to him, but he can do it 20 times per second. And it said it, if you calculate that out, that would be up to 12,000 times a day. Now, he doesn't do it 12,000 times a day. It maybe averages about 600 times a day. And he said it's with a 1,200 G force with each impact. Now, I don't understand G forces very well. But that would be, he said, the equivalent of hitting a stone wall face first at 16 miles per hour with your face, 600 times a day. Well, why in the world does he not get some kind of brain hemorrhage and die? Didn't put that up there. There's some reason for that. You know, and you think about that. If it was a human being doing that, it would be almost like you driving a nail into a tree with your head, which we wouldn't survive that. So how can he do it? Well, he's got an interesting design in his head. Several shock-absorbing structures. He's got a very hard but elastic beak that's unequal lengths, and so that keeps it from shattering, which also absorbs some of the impact. Secondly, he has some very strong muscles under his jaws, so that they contract, these muscles around his jaws contract a millisecond before he makes impact every time. And somehow that diverts the impact around behind his head to the back of the head, and it bypasses his brain. So it creates a cushioning effect and diverts the force. Now, thirdly, he has a very thick skull. And the other thing is he has special cartilage, a special cartilage that's between his beak and his skull that absorbs the impact and distributes it whenever he hits each time. And then lastly, somehow the skull and the cerebral spinal fluid that circulates your brain, it works together to suppress the vibration when he hits that tree. Now, researchers are pretty fascinated with this. Scientists have studied this bird, and they've done it in order to learn how to design some things for airplanes. You know, airplanes have these things called these little voice recorder boxes up in the cockpit, these recording boxes. So if the airplane ever wrecks, has an accident, then hopefully you can retrieve that box, that data, and figure out what may have caused that. But for that thing to survive an airplane crash, it's got to really be able to endure some very powerful impact. So scientists have studied the woodpecker, and they try to create this little metal canister using every dimension that they can, every aspect or facet of the woodpecker absorption system, to recreate this. And then inside it, they embedded all kinds of very sensitive electronics. And then they packed the whole thing into an apparatus about the size of a bullet, and then they loaded it in a gun, an air gun, and they fired it at an aluminum wall. And they report that the system that they built protected that if those embedded electronics from impacts up to 60,000 G. Now, and somebody says, so what? What does that mean? Well, evidently, the best current flight recorders can only withstand 1,000 G. Now, this is pretty new, I think, this research. They haven't done it yet. But isn't it fascinating that they use the woodpecker to learn about some ways that they can better protect these little micro electronic devices. So he has a fascinating head. But you know, as great as that all is, this nice jackhammer system he has, the guy has to eat. If he doesn't eat, then he dies. So once he drills a hole, he's got to get the bug out of that tree, because that's lunch. So, you know, you think about that. He has a tongue that's very specialized for that system. Our tongue starts at the back of our throat, and it comes just out of our mouth, just a little ways. His tongue starts at the back of his throat. It goes down his throat. It goes out the back of his neck. It comes up over the top of his head, out of a little hole between his eyes. Then it goes in through his nostrils, and then comes out of his beak. How in the world did he evolve that thing? Now, most birds, their tongue comes just to the tip of their beak. But with a woodpecker, his tongue can come out his beak up to 10 inches. That is a long tongue. I had to check that twice to make sure I had that fact right. So, you know, he can stick his tongue down the hole in the tree and drag that little bug out. Can you do that? How can he do that? Well, he has little barbs on the end of his tongue there that you can see. And so he literally stabs that bug or that larva. Now, in case that isn't enough, he has a little glue factory that's built into his tongue so that it manufactures precisely the right consistency of glue to stick to that bug. But it doesn't stick to his beak. Yeah, I wondered about that. How about when he gets it out and he gets it in his mouth? Does his tongue get stuck to his beak? It doesn't do that. Now, actually, we've reached kind of a problem here, because he pulls that bug out, gets it in his mouth, it's stuck to his tongue, so he swallows the bug, and what happens? He dies because he chokes to death on his tongue, and his bug is stuck at the bottom of his tongue, right? But he doesn't die. How come? Because he has another little factory inside his beak, so that when his tongue goes in his mouth, it activates a solvent that then will dissolve the glue that is stuck to that's sticking to the bug. So he brings it in his mouth, the solvent deactivates the glue, and lunch is served. There's even a company that makes something called Woodpecker, who makes adhesives and does solvents. Well, that's neat. And there's one other thing I've noticed. You can see his eyes. He has some fascinating eyes. There. Woodpeckers, when they peck, they open their eyes between each peck. But each time they strike the tree, they close their eyes. And so they'll aim their eye, their beak, they'll focus, they'll close their eyes, they'll hit the tree every time between each peck. Because, why? Well, used to, people thought it was because that they wanted to keep the wood chips out of their eyes. You know, you hit the tree and get wood in your eyes. But now they know, after observing these things with special devices, that the force of the woodpecker's beak against the tree, being 1,200 G's in force, that if he didn't close his eyeballs would pop out. Literally. Yeah, I've never seen a blind woodpecker. Because they never miss. They always close their eyes just at the right time. And they always hit the tree in a straight, linear fashion. And that's even important, because head injuries result not just from impact, but too much torque when the head rotates and twists. And the brain is sensitive to torque. So even the way he strikes the tree is precise and linear every single time. Fascinating bird. Now, you know, you look at all these different things and that you have there. A powerful, heavy-duty beak, perfect as a boring tool, tough neck muscles necessary to deliver jackhammer blows, a thick skull made flexible by tiny cross braces, shock absorbers of heavy tissue between the beak and the skull, long, slender tongue, barbed, covered with sticky glue to capture insects, stout legs, vise-like toes, tail feathers that end up with sharp spines. And you have to ask the question, was this all by chance? Or was it by a design? Well, the woodpecker is an example of what's called a perfection of the organism. In other words, several traits exist, and they're all interdependent upon each other, and would be useless or even harmful if they weren't fully developed from the beginning. And evolutionists say these things were created over a long span of time, and it was through a lot of trial and error. They're mutated until finally it comes out with what it is. Well, there's complications for that. For example, a long tongue would be a serious problem if there was no place to put it. But a space in the skull is useless unless there's a tongue to put there. So you need both at the same time. A powerful beak is useless without a brain cushion to absorb the force of each blow. And so, therefore, that cartilage exists already. Evolution says that this bird gradually evolved into what it is today. One by one, each feature made the bird more and more complex and thus became the fittest one to survive. But that's difficult to rationalize, because if the tough bill and the strong neck came before the shock absorber, then the bird's brain would be smashed and evolution would have to start all over. If the skull came before the tough bill and the strong neck, then the beak would be crushed and it would have to start all over. If the tongue came before the bill, the bird couldn't catch the bugs. It could only trip over his tongue. If all the equipment was intact without the long tongue, then he could drill all day, but he couldn't catch the insects and he'd die from starvation. And if the glue in the solvent factory wasn't in place, then he would strangle himself. And if the woodpecker did evolve gradually, the fossil record ought to show all kinds of intermediary steps where this thing, stage by stage by stage, developed these various qualities that he has. W.E. Swinton from the British Museum says, none of those have been found. None of those intermediary stages have been found. The evolutionary origin of the bird is largely a matter of deduction. There's no fossil evidence of the stages through which the remarkable change from reptile to bird was achieved. He always appears completely formed when you find one. So, what caused it? It has order. It has meticulous design. It has skillful workmanship. It has efficient, precise engineering. Was it intelligence behind it, or was it an accident? Which is more reasonable? We have to decide that for ourselves. Scientists still persist. They still will tell you, we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. It's called a presupposition. They've already made the decision. The door is closed. They will not open the door for a possibility. But the Bible still persists. Every house is built by someone. Everybody would acknowledge that. But the builder of all things is God. Which are you going to believe? Which are you going to believe? Through him, John said, all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. This morning, you may say, I believe that. But you know what? To make it a real faith, you have to obey Jesus. He's the creator of the woodpecker. Ever think about that? He created the woodpecker. Didn't he have anything better to do? Well, maybe he did that purposely so that simple people can look at the fascinating design behind that and come to a very simple conclusion. It doesn't have to be something that we can't understand. But we can look at that and we can see that there is a God. There is somebody who designed that. He made us too. And he gave us a purpose. He didn't make us like he did the animals. He gave us the ability to think and reason. He gave us the ability to analyze things like this and recognize the truth about things. He gave us the ability to also decide not to recognize those things. He gave us the ability to make choices. And if we are dishonest in our minds and we have preconceived ideas and things that we want for us, then we might just ignore these kind of facts. He gave us the ability to do that. We can do that. But he gave us so much of evidence, an abundance of evidence, that he exists and that he loves us. And the greatest thing that he did was he sent his own son. And we'll talk about that sometime this year too. Someone who was seen and was witnessed, and people walked with him and talked with him and listened to him, and they watched him die on a cross. And he said, I'm doing this for this world because I care about you. And he asked us to not merely be fascinated with what he's done in things in nature, but be fascinated by the degree of love that he's shown for us in the nature of the sacrifice he made for us. Be fascinated with that. And let that not simply prick your knowledge, but prick your heart. And when we have feelings of guilt and our conscience is bothering us because we know that we have not paid attention to this God, we've not given him the honor and the praise that he deserves, then our heart needs to drive us to listen to what he has said. And he said, I have made a provision for you. I have sacrificed my son so that you can be forgiven for your sins. If we don't do that, then it's all a waste of our time. You can believe in him all day. You can know all of this knowledge. You can have all this knowledge and be fascinated to the end of the world with what he's done. But if you never submit to him and obey him, one day we've got to meet him. And he's going to say, why didn't you do it? And you don't know that you have tomorrow to do it either. So it's always, there's a blessing when we get to have a chance to sit down and study and read his word and see his heart, see his mind, and see what he has done for us. And it should cause us to be motivated to make changes in our life. Would you do that today? Would you make a change? Would you make your way to the front and seek to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins? Would you make a commitment to him, to learn about him and to learn about what his will is for your life? Read his Bible, as we've been challenged this year, to know his will for you. This morning would be a good time to start that while we stand and we sing our song.